This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. President Trump picked Orlando to officially announce his re-election bid. Roads around the Amway Center are closed this morning and officials are prepared for thousands of spectators to descend on the city streets. The president is scheduled to speak at 8 this evening, but many fans were already in line yesterday, making sure they can get a seat in the arena. And there are protests planned. Today on Intersection, we're live with political analysis from Frank Torres and Jeremy Levitt. And we want to hear from you. What does the campaign launch mean for Central Florida? What are you expecting to hear from President Trump during this rally? And whether you're a supporter or a protester, what do you want the president to take away from his visit? Give us a call at 1-866-338-5252. That's 1-866-338-5252. Or you can send us a tweet. We're at WMFE Orlando. Well, joining us in the studio is Jeremy Levitt. He's a distinguished professor of international law at Florida A&M University College of Law. He's an independent. Jeremy, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
We're also joined by Republican political commentator Frank Torres. Frank, welcome back.
Good morning.
And you can join the conversation too. The number is 1-866-338-5252. Reach out to us on Twitter with your comments and questions. We're at WMFE Orlando. Let's hear a little bit from Senator Rick Scott, former governor of Florida. He was in Orlando yesterday for a hurricane preparedness event. He says he wants to hear President Trump talk jobs and security.
So that's why I hope the president will talk about how he's working to keep this country safe. We got a lot of problems. We got the latest thing with Iran, but clearly we've got issues with China and North Korea, and how do we position ourselves so we keep all of our families safe? On top of that, we got to keep looking at how do we make government more efficient so we can have the best economy in the world. You know your family wants a job, right? We all want our families, our kids, and might have grandkids when they get old enough. I want them to have a job. Well, the federal government can have a big part of that. So I hope those are the things he talks about.
Well, Senator Scott says he's also frustrated that Democrats aren't more aligned with the president on the issue of security on the southern United States border. Some fans of the president have been lining up for hours already. They've been in line for more than 24 hours. Here's Jennifer Patil. She got to the Amway Center at 2:30 a.m. on Monday.
We got a room. We go back. We all watch each other online. We watch each other's spots. Who wants to go back, take a shower, who wants to go eat, and come back. And we're like one big family down there.
And meanwhile, protesters are also planning to make their voices heard at a rally a few blocks from the Amway Center. Brandon Wolf is a survivor of the Pulse nightclub shooting. He is one of the organizers of the Win With Love rally.
Just before Donald Trump, you know, pats himself on the back and praises the work that he really hasn't done, we're going to gather a broad swath of community voices to tell their stories about how Trump's policies have actually affected people here in Central Florida. So we're looking forward to hearing from, you know, some temporary protected status workers in the theme park industry. We're looking forward to hearing women who've had abortions, who, you know, those rights are under attack right now. We're looking forward to hearing from a Pulse survivor, part of the LGBTQ community, transgender individuals who've been attacked by these policies. So we're really looking forward to kind of weaving a story of how Trump has actually impacted people.
That's Brandon Wolf. He's a survivor of the Pulse nightclub shooting in 2016. He is one of the organizers of a protest rally that's planned for this afternoon ahead of the president's re-election campaign announcement at the Amway Center. Well, Frank Torres, I want to start with you. Talk a little bit about the logistics of this rally. I mean, some 20,000 people plus inside the Amway Center. There's going to be many more outside. It's quite a challenge for the city of Orlando to kind of wrangle all these people, make sure everything goes across smoothly.
This has been a lofty challenge for the city of Orlando. This many people in an area where there's so much going on. There's Ultimate I-4 construction. There's the basic space involved with a rally like this. I think they've done a commendable job. They've opened up some areas to allow this for these large groups of people. And there's actually a fair amount of decent space between where the planned protesters are and where the supporters will be. And I think the one thing that everybody at the city of Orlando and really local government and people in general today, the word is safety. Mm-hmm. I mean, with the whole world watching, we want everybody to be able to exercise their rights and get home safely. And so far, with the way the logistics are set up, I think we're on the right track to making that happen.
There's also the weather to take into account. The afternoon thunderstorms set to roll in.
And you know, and the one thing the real experts, especially the first responders, are keeping an eye on are heat exhaustion mm-hmm. and heat um, and heat cramps and basically warm weather injuries. So if you are going out there, make sure you're drinking a lot of water and really just try to keep a level head, be safe, and at the same time exercise your rights.
Mm-hmm. Jeremy Levitt, what does it say about Orlando and Central Florida and our position on the political map that the president chooses to make his re-election campaign announcement here in the City Beautiful?
Well, it shows how critical Florida is and has been historically. I think here, President Trump and his campaign are concerned about Florida.
Mm-hmm.
It's a state that can swing. Obviously, Obama achieved the majority of the vote during his two bids. It's a state that has a very odd combination of racial and ethnic minorities that can swing one way or the other. And so I think it's actually quite smart for him to start here.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he can't win Florida, he's in trouble. And so this is one of the bird's nest that he wants to win early on. There's a golden egg in Florida. And I think that starting here and continuing to build a very strong ground game here is going to be important for him. Whether he can do it and whether Biden will come in like a thunderstorm, we'll see very soon.
Is Biden the person that the president has to keep an eye on, do you think? Is he, I mean, it's early days yet, right? I mean, 2020 is more than a year away, but what are you seeing there in those early polling numbers?
I don't think there's another contender on the Democratic side that can rival the president except for Joe Biden.
Hmm.
I think Bernie Sanders is, he couldn't beat Hillary Clinton, and I don't think that he has a chance of beating Joe Biden. And I think Joe Biden will determine whether or not he beats Trump. I mean, he's either going to be his own worst nightmare on the campaign because he's a bit of a bumbler and he can get out of the pocket in some of the comments that he makes, or he'll stand up to President Trump, who, you know, has some of the best one-liners we've seen of any American president. He can demean you with one line. So Joe Biden has his hands full, but he's the only hope for the Democrats. I don't think there's anyone that is within, you know, 10 or 15 percentage points of him.
Frank, it's interesting thinking about the massive field of contenders we have
right
on the Democratic side. And we saw a little bit of this back in 2016 in the Republican presidential primary. We shouldn't forget also that there are some challengers, at least one challenger to President Trump. There's Bill Weld, who's making a run at him, a bit of a long shot there. But what do you make of that?
You know, and I'm sure in some areas of the country, I have higher name ID than Bill Weld. Listen, a primary for Donald Trump is out of the question at this point. There'll be some people that might be able to get a media hit here and there. There might even be a very small faction of never Trumpers that would like to see the president go through a primary. But then again, there were actually people that wanted Obama to go through a primary.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is, the sitting president doesn't get primaried, and I don't see it coming this time around. But as far as Central Florida goes, you know, just the sentiment, Osceola County and Orange County, they're blue. This isn't for, you know, Donald Trump's not coming here trying to change any minds of anybody that's out in the community. If there is somebody, I'd certainly like to hear them call in. But Orlando Central, and everybody can drive in, they can take their buses, they can charter buses, they can drive up and down Orlando's highways to a central part in the state where they can all get together and listen to the president announce his re-election. But the sentiment out there in the community is very, very divided, and I don't think that division is going to go anywhere.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. We're talking about the president's upcoming campaign, his campaign for re-election, the launch in Orlando at the Amway Center this evening. Interested to hear from you if you are one of the people who's expecting to go to that tonight. Maybe you're planning to go to one of the protests. What are you expecting to hear from the president? Are you maybe in the undecided camp at this point, or have you made up your mind? You can give us a call at 1-866-338-5252. That's 1-866-338-5252. Send us a tweet as well. We're at WMFE Orlando. Chris writes in on our Twitter feed, President Trump has no place in the City Beautiful. This is a place built on love and acceptance, not hate and division. It's 2019. We should not have to remind people that women's rights are human rights and that LGBTQ rights are also human rights. Hashtag love wins. So some pretty strong sentiments from Chris there. Jeremy, how does it look to you? I mean, are there some folks who are still in that kind of undecided middle, do you think? I mean, you're an independent. Are you one of the people who makes up that golden egg, per se, of Florida, the undecided who could swing the state from purple to red or purple to blue?
Well, what I would say is this. I disagree a bit with Frank here that in 2012— Barack Obama had 4.4 million people who turned out to vote. In 2016, there were 1.6 million less.
Mm-hmm.
So there were a lot of voters that sat home. And of that group, 36% were African American. Hillary Clinton couldn't turn out the African American vote, particularly the male vote, and either could Bernie Sanders. So I think that if people stay home, Donald Trump has a very good chance of winning. And part of the campaign strategy is to forward a logic and a theory so that people stay home. The Republicans win when minorities stay home. In this case here, I think there are a lot of independent voters that could potentially swing the vote. And I think that they're out there to be gotten. I don't think everyone's mind is set. We're very divisive nationally, but Florida is unique in that respect. And I would say that it depends on what Trump says and what Biden says. If we have low voter turnout, we know what that usually results in. But I think there are votes to get. And I think Donald Trump will actually get a larger number of African-American votes this time around, strangely, than he got. He got about 8% mm-hmm. in the last election. I think he'll be at about 10% now.
And based on what?
Well, employment numbers. I think there are employment numbers. I think that the step he took with the crime bill was good. He basically chiseled away some of the very wicked elements of the crime bill that Joe Biden supported
mm-hmm.
of the past. But a lot of his rhetoric has not been rhetoric that's been liked by minority communities. And my sense is that what he says from here forward will be important. He spoke a lot about infrastructure and rebuilding urban communities and has done very little with that. But he has moved forward with apprenticeship programs and other things that help folks. Mm-hmm. So we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Frank Torres, what are you expecting to hear from the president in this campaign rally? Are you expecting to hear sort of shades of what he might go to policy-wise for 2020?
Well, first of all, I don't think we disagree at all. I think everybody loses when people stay home and they don't vote. As for tonight, I think we're going to hear vintage 2016 Donald Trump. I think we're going to hear a lot of making fun of the opposition. I think we're going to hear a lot of over-the-top remarks. I think he's going to give this crowd that has been camping out for days to hear him exactly what he wants to hear, which is unusual because when you don't have a credible primary, normally that lawmaker or that politician goes directly to the general election. But I don't mm-hmm. think we're going to get that tonight. And I think with Donald Trump, just like you did in 2016, you have to throw all the models out. And real fast, if anybody is heading down there this afternoon, I would like to hear their plans on how they're planning on getting down there, because I might rip them off, because it's going to be very interesting to try to get into that that area with all the transportation and traffic and weather going on. So if you have any ideas or plans on how you're going to get into that rally or to the protests, I certainly would like to hear them.
There's also the factor of trying to get home too afterwards, right?
Yes.
Massive lot of people letting
out.
Which
is just as challenging, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Go to the phones now. We do have Tiffany on the line. Tiffany, are you there?
Yeah, hold on. I had you on speaker. Hello. Hi.
Hi. So what are you thinking? What are you going to the rally? Are you going to a protest?
I'm going to the rally at Stonewall today, actually. It's funny that your caller was just talking about how to get there, because we're talking about that. We're going to Uber down. But I'm actually going to be on stage with my partner, who is the executive director of the Zeba Coalition, probably off to the side, who's going to be there with a trans youth who is not able to, who's wanting to be, you know, in the military and not able to. So, you know, I'm just going there to support her, but then just sort of be there with all these people who are just not happy that he's going to be here and don't quite understand why he would choose Orlando, because he didn't really win this area at all. I think it was like 65% for Hillary. So I don't know. I'm just sort of in a place where I'm like, why are you here today? You affected my way to work and blah, blah, blah. So that's me. That's my comment.
What would you want the president to hear? I mean, if there was a message you would like him to genuinely take away from talking to someone like yourself or other folks, what do you want the president to hear?
Wow. You know, I would just say, I guess, like, for me personally, I would be, you know, you're supposed to be the president of all people. So you need to include the LGBT folks, and not just when you think it might, you know, get you a vote or whatever, but actually include us, especially during Pride Month. you know, not flying the pride flags. It's just really, it's really hurtful. It's hard to go from probably one of the most progressive times in history to now. It's, as being an LGBT person and having a kid at the same time, raising a kid, it's just hard because you never know what's going to come next. So I'm going to go be with my people today, and hopefully, you know, we've got the baby Trump that's going to be flying around. So, you know, hopefully it'll be a positive day when it feels kind of negative. So that's me.
Tiffany, thank you so much for your call. Make sure you stay hydrated out there. As Frank was saying, it's going to be a pretty hot one. Could be some thunderstorms rattling in as well. Frank, you had your finger up there. What are you thinking?
Oh, I was just interested to know who Tiffany was liking early on in the Democratic primary.
Well, I'm sorry we've let Tiffany go there, but that's a good question.
But if any other callers have any ideas of who they're going for early on in the primary, I'd certainly like to hear it, because there's so little data from Orlando as far as outside of the statewide polls showing any sort of increase, except for Biden being the close, the clear front runner.
Mm-hmm. So. I want to take another call here from Sarah from Louisville, Kentucky. Sarah, you're on the line. Sarah, you there?
Sarah, my name is Sarah Grimes. I'm from the Orlando area.
Okay. So what are you going to be doing this afternoon?
I'm going to protest President Trump's visit. I'm very upset about his health care reform policies, which are virtually non-existent.
And is there some kind of personal sentiment going on there? Do you sort of come from a place of you're worried about, you know, things that are affecting you personally, or your friends perhaps, or family?
Thank you so much for that question. No, I'm worried about, well, others as well as myself. I've had an auto accident. And I was going to get medical treatment. I lost my job because my boss didn't like me going for medical treatment and leaving work. And I then had a difficult time getting any medical treatment. And now I do have Medicare, but still it makes no difference because I called Cleveland Clinic, Mayo Clinic, any doctor around, and they refused to see me because I was involved in an auto accident that was someone else's fault. Mm-hmm. I spoke to a Dr. John Littell. He's a local family physician. He's for pro-life. And he told me, oh, I feel so sorry for accident people or workman's comp, but I can't get involved because of litigation. How do I get medical care? Sarah, I had to leave the country.
Expressing some sentiments there, Sarah, that I think a lot of people have some concerns about medical care in this country. So hoping to hear some of that and maybe a little disappointment there. I thank you so much for your call. And if you are heading to the protest, good luck today. I want to get another call in here. We'll take this call in just a moment, but I want to bring you back in, Jeremy, if I could, for a moment. Thinking about independent voters, what does this president need to do to attract independent voters?
I think he needs to tone down his rhetoric. I think that he's missed out on enormous opportunities. I was at the Republican National Convention meeting last year, it was a great meeting, and I think everyone was of the same mind that he's pushing away people he does not have to push away. It's the racialized rhetoric. It's the anti-immigration xenophobic rhetoric. I think the efforts that are being made to look at potential conflict with Iran would push away independent voters.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have to be very, very careful. He needs to ride the economy. He needs to change his tone. He needs to be more inclusive. There are a lot of benchmarks that he's hit that they don't even advertise. Let me give you one. Last year, he signed into law the 400-year anniversary act for African Americans, basically to celebrate the contributions of African Americans since the founding of this country. He's gotten no publicity because he doesn't have the internal expertise to know how to communicate with certain communities as well, which is a big problem. And so that is a big win for a president. Barack Obama obviously wasn't present at the time, but he had made no efforts to sign this bill or to create a bill that would go forward.
Mm-hmm.
President Trump has done that. There are various things that he's done that are not being marketed, and I think it's because he has certain voices he listens to and not other moderate voices. If he doesn't become more moderate in his tone, he's not going to get the independent vote. But I still think it's up for grabs. If he stays to the far, far right, it's going to be a problem for him. So he has to come back more to center. And if he does that and he stays on the economy, I think people will listen. People are tired of the divisive conflict in this country. Independent voters are tired of the divisive conflict. That's why they swung over to Barack Obama, and then they swung back because they felt that the rhetoric was up again. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even matter where the rhetoric was coming from, right? People are turning off the news stations now. They're just tired. And so President Trump has to tone it down. If he doesn't, then he has a there's a very serious likelihood that he'll lose, because the person who will come in with a moderate voice is Joe Biden.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. We're talking to Professor Jeremy Levitt from FAMU College of Law, also talking to Frank Torres, Republican political commentator. And we want to hear from you as well, talking about the upcoming re-election campaign launch in Orlando this evening from the president. Are you going to that? What do you want to hear from the president? Maybe you're one of these independent voters that Jeremy Levitt is talking about, and what would it take to change your mind one way or the other? The number is 1-866-338-5252. That's 1-866-338-5252. You can also reach out to us on Twitter as well. We're at WMFE Orlando. We do have a tweet from GBus1020 who writes, "Independent voter here, what I need to hear from this president, more moderate, centre-focused speak." So kind of to what you were saying there, Jeremy. Also, State Representative Anna Eskamani writes, "And President Trump barely won Florida, and we know that elections are decided along the I-4 corridor. Our hashtag #WinWithLove rally is focused on lifting up the voices of folks directly impacted by our president's hurtful policies, and will speak to our collective power that will flip Florida in 2020. So some bold words there from Representative Eskamani. Frank Torres, what are your thoughts on that? Because, you know, it is a purple state, but it did definitely go red.
Well, on Anna tweeting into the show, yeah, well, you know, hey, she's going to have a busy day, and we can certainly debate those issues whenever she wants to come in. But as far as everything Jeremy said was absolutely correct, I think if Donald Trump deleted his Twitter account, he'd gain 5 points in the polls. Because the economy's doing great, we're hearing good news, but then he goes on Twitter at 4 a.m. in the morning and starts tweeting about Bette Midler and about all these actors and movie stars that have absolutely nothing to do with the political process, and people start questioning what he's all about. So, you know, I think certainly less of the harsh rhetoric would help him out, but then again, that's what helped get him elected in the first place. So I think the winning path is somewhere in the middle. And I think that's what I'll have to concentrate on moving forward.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think he has to stop. I think that Frank hit something. He has to stop the distractions. His team will put out something to get people focused on thinking about the economy, and then he'll tweet something that takes, you know, someone into a different stratosphere when you want them focused on the economy. If I were an advisor to the president today, I would say, listen, you're in the Amway Arena. This Amway Arena is built in a historical area called Paramore. It's a traditional African-American area. My office is 2 blocks away. My house is 2 miles away. It would be wonderful if he wants to look at independent voters to say something about that local community that the Amway Arena is in, to speak to the hearts of the people that are there. Mm-hmm. And that's what minority voters, particularly African-Americans, are looking for. I don't think his team has any clue where the Amway Arena is located, that it's in a historical Paramore, which is a historically black area here, that there's a historically black university 2 blocks down the road. There are things in terms of strategy that the president misses on a regular basis because of the team of people he has around him. You know, they have a certain kind of vision. They think very much alike. They don't have some of the diverse experiences that would lend to, I think, a more formidable campaign. And so he has to refocus if he's going to win. If not, I can tell you this. Joe Biden knows how to go left, and he knows how to go right, and he knows how to bring it all to the middle.
Are you supporting Joe Biden?
Well, maybe.
You may be?
You know what? Here's the thing. Uh-huh. Independent voters are not party driven.
Right.
We look at the candidates. We look at what they say. And then, you know, at the right time, we make a decision. I'm leaning far more toward Joe Biden than I would Donald Trump. That's for certain. But you know what? Joe Biden also has a history that is worthy of being scrutinized. And so, you know, independent voters wait until the poll and then we make a decision.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this then, Jeremy Levitt. Do you think independent voters should be allowed to vote in primaries?
I do. Mm-hmm. I do. And I think this is one of the, you know, not to be too professorial, I think it's one of the problems with our democracy. I like the idea of a direct vote, one person, one vote. We do it for congressional and senatorial elections. We should do it for the presidency. We have too many independent voters in this country to disenfranchise them at the primary level. I think it's a huge mistake.
We're at 1-866-338-5252. That's the number if you want to call in with your thoughts on this upcoming presidential re-election campaign rally happening at the Amway Center this evening. Maybe you've made plans to be down there. Maybe you're one of those people waiting in line who's been waiting there for some time now, hoping to get into that Amway Arena and secure yourself a good spot close to the stage. Maybe you're planning to go to one of those protests. Give us a call, 1-866-338-5252. Reach out to us on Twitter. We are at WMFE Orlando. Frank Torres, I want to come back to something that Senator Scott was talking about yesterday. He mentioned Iran. He talked about national security and something that Professor Levitt alluded to as well. How sort of big in the public consciousness do you think issues like national security are at this point?
I think especially over the more recent days, I think it's becoming more of a bigger issue. We've seen what's been going on out there in that region of the country, and we're sending more troops out there. I believe 1,000 more troops to try to stabilize the region. Of course, it was that controversial Iran nuclear deal a couple of years back. And foreign policy is the ultimate test of leadership on the world stage. And Donald Trump's had a very mixed record on that. He's certainly been abrasive with a lot of other world leaders as far as the global conversation goes. So we're just going to have to see how it develops over the next couple of days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted to go back to Iran in a second, but I want to ask Frank, is there anything the president could do that would cause you not to vote for him?
Well, every candidate has to re-earn my vote every election. And we're still, we're still 15 months out? And so there's still going to be we still have a lot of debates to go. We still have a lot of ground to cover, and there's a lot of things that can happen between now and next November. But hey, just like you said earlier, I love the way the economy's doing, and I love these low job numbers, and I love being able to walk out. Orlando's the finest city in the world, in my opinion. So I have no debates why he's coming here. He's coming here because this is where it's at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Truly is the city beautiful. On the economy, I want to bring in a call here. We have Julie on the line. Julie, you have some thoughts about the economy. What's on your mind?
Hey, my comment is that I feel like everyone keeps talking about how great the economy is for everyone. And as a millennial, who has been overlooked, I feel like that is not necessarily true. Most of the people my age that I know are working in the gig economy or mm-hmm. are having to work a couple of different jobs. And it just feels like because we're not necessarily a very consistent voting bloc, those economic situations don't matter or take like center stage when everyone's talking about success.
What do you think, Julie, when you hear people talking about millennials and their voting habits, like the notion of millennials not being politically engaged? Does that kind of rub you up the wrong way?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think, I think it's one of those things where people just assume as we'll get older, we'll become more consistent voters. But since it seems like no one's really paying a whole lot of attention, why should anyone vote? I think voter turnout is really suppressed in millennials.
Julie, thank you so much for your call. Appreciate you weighing in there with your opinion. And want to get another call in here from Trevor. Trevor, you're on the line. What are your thoughts about this re-election rally and everything around the economy, foreign policy, other issues politically driving things? Trevor, are you there?
Hello?
Yep, you're on the line.
Yes, this good economy that everybody's raving about is not helping poor people. This economy is helping the rich. 99% of the people are suffering. They can't afford to pay their rent. They can't afford to pay their light bill. They can't pay for it. Can't afford to pay for their car. And living in Orlando is very, very expensive. The average person have to have five people working in their house just to pay almost near $1,000 in rent. Mm-hmm. Orlando's salaries does not reflect Orlando's living. So people are gravely mistaken. This president, all he talks about is divisiveness, trying to make people hate each other. That's not the era that we're in these days. We are in the era of people loving each other, helping each other. Hate is not going to make America better. Hate is just going to make us worse.
Let me just ask you a question real quick, Trevor, because this is something that Frank wanted to ask one of our other callers. If you're definitely not planning to vote for this president in the upcoming election, who do you like on the Democratic ticket so far?
On the Democratic ticket, I am looking seriously at Joe Biden and Senator Kamala Harris, even though she is low in the ratings right now. But my problem with Joe Biden and anybody in his era is age. Mm-hmm. I think we need a younger president, no matter if Democrat, Republican, whatever. Somebody has to run the country. But I think we need somebody young instead of somebody in their 70s. Mm. Because, you know, this era of the world is the young people. Not the elders. Not like Joe Biden doesn't have good things in mind for the country. But I would prefer to see somebody younger than Joe Biden. But if he is the nominee, I certainly will vote for Joe Biden. I would not vote for Donald Trump. I would vote for Republican, but not Donald Trump.
Hearing you loud and clear there, Trevor, thank you so much for your call. Jeremy, that kind of goes to your thoughts a little bit, I think, about the need for a candidate who speaks to a more diverse voting bloc and somebody maybe a bit younger.
Yeah, I think that's right. The problem is there's 20 candidates on the Democratic ticket, and they have young and old. And the bottom line is the polls and the stats show that Joe Biden is the front runner. Joe Biden is going to ride the Obama wave as far as he can run it. People love Barack Obama, who are Democrats and even a lot of independents. Joe Biden will bring a new mix of white independents and minority independents that are moderates, depending on how he conducts himself. And I will say this. The last caller mentioned something about millennials not being sought after. I would disagree with that. I think mm-hmm. Donald Trump's first step back was all about a millennial movement, which was a pro-justice movement, mm-hmm. Which is an anti-criminal justice movement. So I think there has been a response in both of the last administrations, Trump and Obama, to millennials. But millennials have to develop a singular political identity and advocate on issues that are important. And I think that's where the problem is. The body politic will always respond to a cohort of people. We can see that with the LGBTQ advocacy. We can see that with minorities when they press on certain issues. So I would slightly disagree with that. What I will say is this, that in order for Joe Biden to win, who he picks as vice president is critical. And what I will tell you is the best candidate for him right now is Kamala Harris. Mm-hmm. If there is a Biden-Harris ticket, I think they'll win the election unless something happens that is coming far out of left field. That's a winning ticket. Whether Joe Biden is smart enough to do it, we don't know. We saw what Hillary Clinton did with her last vice presidential candidate. What's his name again? I don't think anyone remembers.
Frank Torres.
I remember he was bilingual. I remember his Spanish was pretty good. Now, Tim Kaine was an interesting choice. I think a Biden-Harris ticket would be very formidable. But, you know, one thing, another issue that he brings up, mm-hmm. low wages and affordable housing. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of thing that local leaders still have to work on, regardless of what the political situation looks like in Washington.
How much of that can you lay at the feet of our federal leaders?
It gets much more complicated the further up you go. I mean, first I look at local leaders and what they're doing locally to develop jobs and get higher wages and what they're doing about affordable housing. I know Orange County today is having another briefing on affordable housing. And one other angle, I think I believe her name was Julie, she's a millennial, student loan costs. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a bigger issue than a lot of people. There might be a lot of millennials that will cross over party lines if somebody has the right answer for the rising cost of student loans. So.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I want to get a couple of questions, a couple of comments rather, in from Twitter. Rachel writes in, I will be taking Ride Sunrail to the rally. Only way to go since Uber and Lyft will be surcharged. I'm going to watch people in the streets, not the president. And she had another tweet too, which is an interesting point here on the economy. Trump won because he focused on economic issues. Dems need to do the same. Blue collar equals blue party. They need to focus on stagnant wages, education, transportation, infrastructure. So people getting a sort of a live look at transportation infrastructure as they head into Orlando for the rally this afternoon and protests as well. And Suzanne writes on Twitter, I'm an independent voter and I regularly switch my party registration depending on who is running in the primaries. You can do that online. Party affiliation means nothing, so open primaries make more sense. Kind of back to what we were talking about before, Jeremy, I kind of wonder if there is maybe some momentum for that or if that is pretty much set in stone.
Well, I hope there is. And certainly, if I were a federal candidate, I'd be talking about this. I think both parties benefit from open primary, to be perfectly honest. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the questions that you asked is critical. All politics is local. And we have to really begin to move out of political correctness and have an honest conversation about politics. Look, these young people talking about low wages, having a working wage, a living wage, et cetera. Mm-hmm. These are real issues. Orlando has a high number of homelessness. Okay, where are the local politicians discussing this issue? Remember that.
To be fair, I think they are discussing the issue. Yeah. I mean, it has been on the forefront for local leaders for some time.
Yeah, they've been discussing it,
but it's a tough problem.
Yeah, it's a tough problem. They've been discussing it, but when I say discussing, I mean discussion has to move to action.
Mm-hmm.
I've lived here since 2008. I've seen the numbers sorely increase. And so I think these local issues are critical. And when we look at the areas where Donald Trump needs to win, we look at the cities, all of them are Democratic strongholds. When we talk about where he needs to swing the vote, these are counties where there's a low working wage, where there's homelessness. And the reality is Democrats have controlled these cities for the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jeremy Levitt is a distinguished professor of international law at Florida A&M University College of Law. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And Frank Torres is a Republican political commentator. You can find his commentary over at franktorres.org. Thank you so much again, Frank.
I'll see all of you downtown.
Up next, getting a driver's license is a rite of passage for American teens, but for teens in the foster care system, that can be a big challenge. We'll hear about a program that gets older teenagers in the foster care system into driver education. That's when Intersection returns in a minute. This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. Getting a driver's license is a rite of passage for teenagers, but for teens in foster care, getting that license often isn't easy. And without a driver's license, getting to school or work can be an exhausting and expensive ordeal. 4.5 years ago, Keys to Independence launched to help kids in the foster system enroll in driver education. The state-funded program, run by nonprofit Embrace Families, has helped 500 older teens in foster care get their driver's licenses. From the Education Desk this week, we spoke to David Finucane with Keys to Independence and Danielle Levine with Embrace Families. David Finucane began the conversation.
There was a survey done in 2014 that looked at outcomes for foster care in the state of Florida. And one of the outcomes that they found was for that same population, 15 to 21, all of the youth that were eligible to get a license in foster care, only 20 of them actually had a license. So that's where the idea for this program came about. It was pitched to DCF. Numbers were attached to it, and it was piloted for 3 years. And after that 3-year period, it was decided to make it permanent by the state legislature and the governor.
Danielle, what are some of the challenges that foster kids face if they don't have a license?
I mean, here, especially, you can see in Central Florida, mass transit is not our friend. We don't have a bus system that is really allows you to be able to travel effectively. You know, if you talk to our kids, they'll tell you stories of, I'm just trying to go to school. I go to UCF and I have to wake up at 6 a.m. and take the bus for 5 hours just to go, you know, about 10 miles to get to school. And that's really difficult when you're also trying to have a job and you're trying to, you know, sometimes you're having to work in childcare with that as well. And so it's just a huge obstacle, you know, without that ability to be able to have that independence of, I need to go somewhere I'm able to drive myself. There's just so many factors that they're having to schedule their entire day around figuring just how can I get to work? Mm-hmm. How can I get to school? You know, we even had a young woman who was telling us, you know, she worked at a fast food restaurant. And so by the time that she would get out in the evenings, the buses weren't running anymore. And so she was having to take Ubers to get there and back every single day. And so it felt like all of the money that she was making was just going towards transportation to get to and from work. And so when you're trying to support yourself, you know, that just makes it that much more difficult.
Why do you think it is that until you launched the program, the rate of uptake of driver's licenses was so low?
So funding was one issue. Every step of getting the driver's license costs money. So we had funding for all those steps along the way. But the other piece that was missing was a culture shift was needed. There are so many things that need to be done when a child is in foster care. And the case manager gets put in place as almost a proxy parent. And if they're not told that they have to do something, their attentions and time is going to be turned to things that the court tells them they have to do for a child. Mm-hmm. When we came along, the funding was there, and we started to try to change the culture. And now we're finding that judges and hearings are saying to the caseworkers, what are you doing to get this child their driver's license? And they're able to push them directly into our program where the funding and the culture is waiting for them. So it's taken a little bit of time, but it's really starting to stick now.
What about access to vehicles? Is that something you have to tangle with as well? Because I imagine for student drivers in this program, getting access to a vehicle to practice with could be a challenge.
And that was something big that we were able to address early on. The having a car to practice on and having a car to take the road test with was a challenge. So we pay a little bit extra to every driving school in every part of the state. We've had 100% success with this from mm-hmm. Key West all the way out to the Panhandle. The driving schools will pick the youth up from their placement. That's a relative's home, a group home, wherever they're living, give them the driving lessons, bring them back home, and then they'll do the same thing again for the road test. Mm-hmm. So that means the car that they've been practicing on is the car that they'll actually take the road test in. That takes burden off of the people involved in the care of the child, and it also gives them a car to use consistently from practice to road test.
Have you met any resistance along the way? Is there anybody who said, this is not money well spent, or we could be spending this money on other things?
The biggest challenge, it wasn't about the money that it could be spent on something else. The biggest challenge is with foster parents, but I completely understand where they're coming from. Foster parents take on a lot of responsibility. They take on mm-hmm. a lot of risk. They bring in a new person into their home. For them, it's about, I don't know about putting this person on my car insurance. And with minors, if they get a driver's license, they're automatically added to the parent's policy. Mm-hmm. That's the piece that I think we're working on the most when I talk about culture. That's the culture change we're working on right now.
So do the children in foster care who are part of this program, are you able to have the foster parents put them on their insurance, or is there another way to get around that?
We're able to pay for it. Mm-hmm. We're able to pay for the difference of adding the youth onto the foster parents insurance. We're able to pay for any increases that occur down the road while that child is living in the home and on the policy. If they get a ticket and the insurance rate goes up, show us proof of the ticket, we'll pay the difference. Mm-hmm. If there's an accident, we pay the deductible up to $1,000. We've only had four in the life of the program. We just need proof from the body shop or the mechanic that's working on the vehicle, and we pay them directly. So there are things there to take that burden off of the foster parents. I think it's just a matter of showing them that, you know, we back up what we say we're going to do.
Were you a bit nervous going into it? Like, you know, what are all the things that could go wrong? And we just hope that nothing does go wrong while we're still in the beta testing phase of this.
It was more along the lines of knowing lots of things were going to go wrong and how we were going to react to them and how we were going to be as transparent as possible when things went wrong. I would say that attitude has been safe because not as much went wrong as we thought would go wrong. Mm-hmm. It's been a lot more smooth than we anticipated. But really, it's just things would come up and we'd figure out how to address it and then we'd move on to the next. The original issue was case management with youth that live in group homes. And I think we've come a long way with changing the culture there. So now we're just moving on to the next challenge.
So, Danielle Levine, what would you say are some of the success stories you've heard from the youth who've been through the program and gotten their licenses?
I mean, really, Justin, how it's been such a shift in how they're able to conduct their everyday life. You know, without a license, some of them going to school, it was, I want to do a sport. I can't because I don't have a way to get home. Or my friends constantly ask me to hang out and I can't. And so they're not friends with me anymore because I'm not able to spend time with them. And so for our youth, it gives them the chance to be like every other teenager. It gives them a chance to feel normal. You know, when we're turning 16, which is typically when people are going through this process, it's really hard when you see everyone else doing this thing that's such a huge milestone that our mm-hmm. culture puts such a huge emphasis on. And you just think, there is no way that I can take part of this. It kind of feels like a huge section of life is just passing you by. And so being able to participate, whether it's clubs or sports or with friends, and being able to just do what every single other teenager at that point in their life is also doing, it just makes me feel, you know, I'm not just a kid in foster care. Like, I'm normal. I'm just your everyday average teenager able to do what every other teenager is doing.
You're right. It's a rite of passage, isn't mm-hmm. it?
Yeah, definitely.
How do you see this program expanding? I mean, it sounds like there is a pretty massive demand for this. Are you just going to keep trucking along at the pace you're at now, or do you think there might be a point at which you have a waiting list of youth who want to get on the program but they can't quite? How do you see that playing out?
We've had the conversation about a waiting list. We haven't had to cross that bridge yet, but we did want to be prepared for it if it does occur. And that would be just if there's more people and a greater demand for the services than there are funds to meet it, what would that look like?
Mm-hmm.
The way we would approach it is we would put a waiting list in place and we would tier services and we would tier need. And then we would turn around and go back to the state and say, we've reached the point where I think we need to look into putting more funding into this program.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the approach we take for that. There's also a bill floating around right now at the federal level to make this a program across the entire country.
And then you would get federal funding for it.
Each state would pull down funding to do it in their own state. Every state is a little bit different how they administer driver's licenses and mm-hmm. learner's permits. But the idea would be, yes, to put this in place for foster children in the entire country. Funds would be there for child welfare in each state to pull down.
Danielle, is this program available everywhere in the state, or are there some areas you haven't been able to get to yet?
The entire state of Florida, all the way from the Panhandle down to Key West.
Is demand purely based on population, or do you find there are some areas where you really need a cab more than you may somewhere else? You talk about the mass transit we have here in Central Florida. Other parts of the state, it may be a little more robust, so perhaps youth who don't have a driver's license may not be at such a disadvantage?
Yeah, it really just depends on the makeup of the city. I mean, you're able to get around much easier, say, we'll just throw out Miami as an example, mm-hmm. versus being out in a really rural area that doesn't have any form of transit. So it really just depends on the, you know, what that city construction looks like.
Mm-hmm. And then are there some things that you've seen in the process of testing this out in the first kind of little while that it's been running that you think we need a little more support in a certain area, like, for example, helping youth kind of buy cars down the track? Are there thoughts of getting that up and running as well?
We actually have a really great partnership with ReNissan, where every year they have a Cars for Kids giveaway, mm-hmm. where they surprise two of our youth with the brand new Nissans. And it's really hard when you're at that age to be able to afford a car. I was very fortunate in that my parents bought one for me. But if you're a child that's in foster care, you don't have that same luxury more often than not.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been something that's really exciting. I think this is our fourth year, David, that we've been doing that.
I think it'll be in August or September, fourth year.
Mm-hmm. And there's some other partnerships that the Keys Independence team has put in place as well.
Yes, Embrace Families has a partnership with Iberia Bank. They run it a little tight because they don't want to set people up for failure. It's called the Car Loan Program.
Mm-hmm.
Applicants are screened by a committee based – it's staff from Embrace Family and from other agencies that are involved in foster care in the area. And what their goal is to find a four-year loan at approximately $200 a month. So it's mm-hmm. about 5% interest. And they also work with an auto broker to find a really good car at a good price. And we've got about 9 loans out right now. Kids driving around cars that they were able to get a loan in their own name. Four of them have paid the cars off themselves and own them outright.
Are other states doing something similar to help youth in foster care get their transportational independence?
Not that we're aware of. We are trying to promote the car loan program to other agencies. So that's mm-hmm. something that's at the agencies are pretty much divided along the county circuit courts. So we're trying to push that to the agencies that run other counties.
So when you launched this program, you were effectively launching it from scratch. You couldn't look at another state and say, well, they did this thing and it's worked really well. We can just adopt what they've done and bring it here to Florida.
Yeah, all of this has been from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
So that car loan program started out with one driver, and now there's 9 active and 4 have paid off. That's been successful as well.
I can't even talk about how important that car loan program is. You know, we have our kids and they would come to us because they would sign up for, you know, their car loans and they would have like 30% more in interest because they just didn't have anyone to walk them through the process. They didn't know, you know, what the norm is, how things are supposed to be, and people mm-hmm. are taking advantage of them. And so I can't even imagine, you know, my 4% interest is hard. Imagine paying 30% on a car that's, you know, breaking down all the time because it's a beater. And so being able to have a committee that's like this and that's walking them through the process, it's not only access, it's also a lot of education that goes into it as well, teaching them about maintenance. you have to get an oil change every 3 months. The reason your car's having problems because it's been about 2 years. You know, there's so many things that for us, it's natural because we see our parents doing it. We see our parents modeling it. And for these kids, they, like we said, they just don't have that same opportunity. And so just making sure that they understand fully what it is to own a car and, you know, just how to make sure that you're walking through that process correctly.
Danielle Levine is the communications manager with Embrace Families. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
And David Finucane is the initiative support supervisor at the Keys to Independence program. David, thank you as well.
Thank you.
Support for Intersection comes from our listeners and from Advent Health. Education reporting on 90.7 News is supported by Helios Education Foundation. Intersection's producer is Brendan Byrne. Our intern is Paola Chinchilla. Technical direction from Juan Gualda. Production assistance for today's show from Danielle Pryor. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and we're on the NPR One app. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.